Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Rotten Tomatoes is Wrong. I am your host, Mark Ellis, joined, as always, by the incredible Jacqueline Coley, who just has such a beautiful smile on that signifies she's almost at the end of award season.
That is exactly what that is.
Your busiest time of the year, your tax season.
I know, and honestly, just as oppressive. But it's like, whatever. You can't be mad about it, but it is a lot.
No, it's you're coming to the end of a season. You're coming to the end of a very long movie. You're just coming to the end of a thing that you had embarked on. So
a journey.
Yeah, we're going to be talking about a journey in this show. And I particularly want to thank both you and our special guest, Matt Nost, for this episode of the podcast, because I had such a great workout this morning because I watched our movie again last night.
How is this part of my intro?
You, Matt, and I go way back in dominating the backcourts of rec leagues here in Los Angeles, the Municipal County Rec League B League. But today we're talking about Rocky IV. And I watched it last night. I watched the director's cut for the first time ever.
You went so extra credit.
Rocky IV, it never fails to give, I think maybe I'll just limit it to men of a certain age, but probably a lot of people, juice when it comes to I need to get back in the gym. This movie does it just about as well as anything.
Okay.
The 38 extra minutes. How many more montages? Because this thing already has, I love it. There's one montage that ends, and then there's a scene between Rocky and Adrian, and then he goes, boom, right back into montage. So you're saying in that 38 minutes, we get at least two more?
Proof that what is life? It's just the moments in between montages. The director's cut is apparently 93 minutes. The original Rocky IV, which is the movie we're going to be talking about ad nauseum today. I might get into somewhere the director's cut is different, but we want to focus on Rocky IV, sure. The OG Rocky IV. That is 91 minutes. So it's only 2 minutes long, but there's a lot of stuff that they took out. And they put back in other things that weren't seen in the original one. So there's a lot here. If you're a fan of the Rocky IV robot, we're talking about the Rocky IV version that does have the robot in it. That's the good news. The bad news is, unfortunately, the movie's 37% rotten on the tomato meter. When we had our book a few years ago, the Rotten Movies We Love release, it was 40%. And somehow it's gone down another 3%. The audience is a little closer to where at least some folks on this panel lie, 79% of the audience, but 37% rotten is Rocky IV from 1985. Matt Nost, you're a special guest today. You're a celebrated comedian.
Thank you. Catch him
when he's on tour. He's also, again, deadly three-point shot. We also have this great trivia sensation you've created on YouTube called Settle the Score, where every week you have two movie enthusiasts, a lot of pundits in this space, some celebrity guests. They try to guess the score that your buddy Andy is playing on the piano, and
true,
it's from a movie, three rounds. And so I figured you're an expert on rounds and judging rounds. We have you for Rocky IV.
Way to tie that back in.
I didn't know if I was going to get there, but there we are. So I put the question to you. You always make your guests settle the score. I'm going to make you say, is the score here right or wrong? Is Rotten Tomatoes wrong?
Which
about Rocky
score
IV?
Are we talking about?
We're
the
talking
critical
about
score?
37% on the tomato
meter. Listen. That just means that 63% hate America. That's what that means. I salute this movie. Listen, how many movies do you know brought down a political ideology? Because this helped end communism.
Yes, it did.
It did.
I agree.
It did. When Rocky stands up and gives arguably one of the greatest speeches of all time. It's so bad. It's so bad. I love it.
I can't tell if you love it or hate it, or if you hate it so much you love it.
It's both. I love it and hate it.
I'm feeling this. I'm very feeling this. Yeah.
But when the knockoff, you know, the Kirkland brand Gorbachev stands up and he's like,
Kirkland brand Gorbachev.
Yes, that's... That's him saying, I am releasing the shackles of communism and I am joining the world economy. Rocky helped to do that. It was, what, 3 years later, the Berlin Wall came down. I think this is part of the momentum that got that ball rolling.
You're right. So you're saying that somewhere in Germany, the band The Scorpions was watching Rocky IV and they got the impetus to write Winds of Change.
Yeah.
Because in fact, there was a wind of change.
They could feel it.
And this film helped end the Cold War. Jacqueline Coley, I'll go to you next. Is Rotten Tomatoes right or wrong about 37% for Rocky
IV? I don't know, because like I do feel they're right, but I also feel they're wrong. So like I was like, yes, this is exactly the thing I want to say, because I absolutely do feel that Rotten Tomatoes is wrong about this movie, because it is a movie that like begs an emotional response. And you can't like deny that it is a movie that, if the purpose of filmmaking and moving motion pictures is to implant emotions or ideas into the minds of the audience, you can't say it doesn't like complete that tenfold. But Lord, it is like this camp-tastic, just so cheesy 80s with barely a plot, just laughable villains.
Laughable villains.
Laughable in their archetypes. Like, this is like, these are just like Boris and Natasha level of depth.
Yes. What else do you want?
I mean, this is the movie version of The Adventures of Bullwinkle. I mean, it is not deep, but it doesn't have to be that deep. It does not have to be that deep, but it is not. And so I have a hard time. If you want to call it an enjoyable time, it's certified fresh. If you want to call it cinema, I got to go with the critics. Like, I feel in between.
Which is why I have such a problem with this being rotten on the tomato meter. Because you say if it lacks depth or it's not that complicated, neither is boxing. All right. It's boxing. It's like, I'm going to get in a ring with somebody and whoever walks out of it is probably going to be declared the winner. And so here you have the ultimate test. It's a redemption story. It's about friendship. It's about moving on. It's about realizing that you can't do one thing forever in life and you got to pivot sometimes. And sometimes you just got to suck it up and have a great, incredible, life-changing sports training montage.
But I don't think you can hold this movie up to saying, is it cinema? Because it was never intended to be cinema.
It wasn't intended to be cinema, but it used to do a passable version of at least giving the characters both more depth and more themes. And look, first of all, like, again, you killed my friend and I'm coming for vengeance. I'm not asking
on
for
Christmas.
A lot. I'm not
on
asking
Christmas,
for
exactly.
a lot. That is literally the same plot of John Wick, but you can add more to it.
It was the peak of sort of 80s American machismo. And because Stallone and Schwarzenegger this time were like the two of the biggest movie stars on the planet.
Yeah.
You know, Schwarzenegger coming off Terminator and he was about to blow up in movies like Predator. And you had Stallone with the Rambo franchise and with the Rockies. And they just kept going. This was probably the Rocky movie where they're like, oh, we're just going to keep getting these movies every so often. But we didn't. And they took an interesting turn afterwards. So this is a very interesting point in the Rocky mythology. So we want to get to a lot of Rocky IV talk, obviously, but I also want to relate this movie to the other Rockies, which one stands the tallest, including the Creed movies, because Creed III comes out, I believe, tomorrow as of this recording, or maybe the next week. So Jack and I have seen Creed III. We might give you a little sneak preview as to our thoughts, but let's get into a couple editorial shout-outs first before we get to 2 minutes with Tim. All the Rocky and the Creed movies are ranked according to our experts on RottenTomatoes.com, so you can check that out. You might be surprised that the number one movie, Creed, is number one. Rocky IV is number seven. And if you think that's too low, Matt, you're really not going to like this news. RottenTomatoes.com also has the 33 best boxing movies of all time. Rocky IV did not make the list.
So what Play It to the Bone made it to the list?
I don't know where Play It to the Bone landed.
Well, I will say on both those lists is those are based on critical opinion. It's not like what we call our essentials, because we sometimes do these lists where it's like, these are the movies. If you are trying to watch boxing movies, you need to watch all of these, whether it be rotten or fresh. These ones are just the top rated. So Rocky IV at 39%. That'd be a pretty weak list if
Rocky
it made it.
Rocky III snuck in there.
It was. It's fresher.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
There's not even a high bar for that. I think the highest one is 85.
But yeah, if you look at the top 33 movies according to this list, you do get some Rocky IV in it because Creed II is in the top 33.
Yeah, it's the updated version of Rocky IV.
A lot of connective tissue. And then obviously one more mention for our wonderful book, The Rotten Movies We Love. You can get that wherever you enjoy books. And so right now, before we get into our movie talk segment, we are going to toss it to our good friend Tim Ryan. He does our segment 2 Minutes with Tim. He's going to tell you what the critics were saying about this movie when it came back way back at the height of the Cold War, 1985.
2 Minutes with Tim.
Look, nobody here is going to strenuously deny that in its best moments, Rocky IV is pretty awesome. Even if it's often preposterous Cold War propaganda, it's hard not to root for Rocky in the undeniably exciting final match against Ivan Drago. However, awesome as it can be, Rocky IV also has a number of issues that even fans are likely to acknowledge, like its utter predictability, or the excessive use of footage from the first three movies, or the hometown Soviet crowd switching allegiances in mid-fight, or the robot butler, which has a real-life backstory that's pretty poignant, but still. That said, a lot of folks love this movie partly because of those elements, not in spite of them. But it's hard not to see why critics back in 1985 were less than impressed, particularly given the high standards set by the original Rocky less than a decade before. Rocky IV is rotten at 37% on the tomato meter with 49 reviews, and it has a 79% audience score. So what do the critics have to say? In a rotten review, Roger Ebert of the Chicago Sun-Times wrote, "Even Sylvester Stallone seems to be getting tired of the series. As the writer and director, as well as the star, he puts himself through the same old paces." However, in a fresh review, Gene Siskel of the Chicago Tribune wrote that Stallone creates credible villains worthy of his heroic character. The Rotten Tomatoes critics' consensus reads, "Rocky IV inflates the action to absurd heights, but ultimately rings hollow thanks to a story that hits the same basic beats as the first three entries in the franchise." So that's Rocky IV. Let's kick it back to Jacqueline and Mark. If they can change, and you can change, everybody can change.
Thank you, Tim, and a lovely sentiment to leave us with there. In the words of the Rocky IV robot, to you, Tim, happy birthday, Pauly. Let's get right into movie talk here. Hit the music, Brian. Just so much to discuss. First of all, I have an update on the 33 best boxing movies of all time. Play it to the bone. Did not make the list. It is sitting at 11% on the tomato meter. Matt, you are welcome to come back on the show when we have our Play It to
not
the Bone
happen.
Episode.
Not
going to
happen. I'll join the critics on that one. Do we have a this movie is garbage show? Because I'll join that show.
You are allowed to say Rotten Tomatoes is right. Although with us, you know, we tend to disagree with this particular tomato meter score. Let me go back to the first time that young Matt Nost heard of the name Rocky Balboa. You were aware of this franchise because, mm-hmm. like, to me growing up, it was always you talk about the Rocky movies and like talk about them with like my dad, and it's like, wait, it's three, the one with the Russian guy, or is that with Mr. T? You didn't really know the names of anybody, just knew Rocky was fighting something impossible.
I think the first one I might have seen was three because of the Hulk Hogan aspect that was huge into wrestling, like a bunch of kids my age.
Yeah.
But this movie, four, ties in with all those themes because that was a lot of wrestling, which is USA. Mm-hmm. So to see that on the big screen, I was like, this is amazing.
Did you see it in theaters?
Yeah, I saw Rocky. I was a little kid. I was six.
And you saw Rocky IV in a movie theater.
I saw Rocky IV in a movie theater.
Okay, so our mutual friend, a wonderful comedian, Steve Simone, from Philadelphia. I should point that out right off the bat. Sure. He's from Philly. He went to go see this like opening weekend with his entire family in Philadelphia. He said the crowd stood up and cheered.
Yes.
Like multiple times during the Drago fight. Like,
really?
The movie theater.
They turned an action movie into a boxing movie. Yeah. It's a hybridized of two forms of
this
movies.
This was white people?
This was, it was Philly. It was probably a nice cross section because you got to remember.
That's
Rocky,
what I was confused by, because I'm just picturing, I know it's Philly, but let's be real, depending on the theater, you know what I mean?
Rocky has such a Philly lineage for,
oh,
and,
yeah.
and
yeah.
It, it's very good at appealing to a wide swath of demographic because you have obviously the Rocky Balboa
story. I would
story,
be more impressed if it was white people. That is not their vibe in the theater, is my point. Like, you go into a movie theater in Atlanta.
Still, something like Rocky? Yes, I think that's more if there are other movies.
No. I'm basically what I'm saying is if the movie can inspire the never make noise in the theater crowds of most establishments to all of a sudden decide to get into a dialogue, this is cinema. I agree.
The next year, white people probably had a good run with Top Gun, but nothing like Rocky IV. And you don't have to believe me or Matt or Steve or anybody. You can just go watch Eddie Murphy Raw and see the bit he does about white guys leaving a Rocky movie and thinking they're invincible.
This is a different vibe.
That's
I do feel like there's a different vibe in this movie. I think that
there it is.
I felt it.
So did you just go, as 6-year-old Matt knows, did you just like charge out of the theater pumped up?
I mean, it just tied into all those things that I was already, you know, going off the top turnbuckle with my brother at home. Yeah. So it just fed into the rage you have as a 6-year-old.
Yeah.
So it just fed into that quite beautifully. And it cemented. It's hands down my favorite Rocky, still is to this day.
So, Jacqueline, you were aware of the Rocky franchise when?
I was aware of the Rocky franchise early just because of Apollo Creed and Carl Weathers.
Okay.
Like, he was very popular. And so I want to say the second Rocky, where they rematch, was the first one that I ever remember seeing. And it was like probably like a TNT like rerun, basically. Sure. And I know I was like way older, you know, whatever. I think I was born like when the third one came out. Anyway, but Mr. T, that was like the first one where I was like really into it because Mr. T was scary in that movie.
Yes,
like
he
Mr.
was.
T was like a legitimate like super villain. And that to me also had that like wrestling element to it. That really like solidified both of those for me.
Right. And then you have Rocky V, and then the franchise just sort of ends and is in the doldrums for 15 years until Rocky Balboa comes out. And then we have this resurgence again with Creed in 2015, which got great critical reviews and made a crap ton of money. Now we have a new franchise to celebrate. Again, one that does tie back to a lot of the things that we see in Rocky IV. So, you know, it's a hard thing to kick off with, but like, as Jacqueline pointed out, Matt, she feels like if you're just looking at this with a critical eye, the movie should be 37%. But just like as somebody watching a fun movie, you love it. Is this a bad movie that you just think is good to watch?
I think we all look at different movies through different prisms.
Mm.
So you go into this one not going, cinema verite, this is going to blow me away. I can't wait for all the subtext. Although there is some weird stuff in this one upon rewatch that I never noticed before.
Like what?
The opening fight, the Living in America, that whole sequence.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of pagan symbolism. It seems like there's a bull. There's a bull that comes down and it transforms into, a Creed dies and he's in a Christ-like pose as Rocky is holding him. But for some reason, Paulie has a torch, but the skull is at the top of the torch. It hasn't been lit yet.
Did you put on Temple of Doom by accident?
I don't know. Trust me. Go back and watch it.
I remember the bull. I remember.
Bull. Why is there a bull? There's no.
Well, the one thing I do know is they were basing that moment off of James Brown's stage shows at the time.
Did he have a bull on his stage show?
He had like all kinds of crazy stuff. He did have all kinds of crazy stuff. And I do remember animals were a part of it. I don't know if it was a bull.
It's a huge bull.
I don't know if it was a bull, but like because James is singing his song, Living in America, for this one. That whole stage show, like that whole thing, that was just James at the time.
Right.
He was known for those types of shows.
Well, then that's me reading, because then the Christ-like and Madonna pose afterwards, I was like, well, is that supposed to
mirror the pagan? I don't know if it mirrors with the pagan, but I do agree with you as a Christ-like pose.
It's a Renaissance painting.
Yeah, like that.
Yeah, he's cradling him in his arms, and for some reason they allow every reporter into the ring immediately. I've never seen that.
If you look at the first fight that we see in Rocky IV, and which is the exhibition match. This was supposed to be an exhibition between Drago coming to America and, you know, Apollo Creed, because Rocky didn't take the fight. So now Apollo Creed can kind of step in, and Apollo Creed can use this as a springboard to be back to relevance, because he hasn't been a professional boxer in 5 years. He's been retired. So They get in the ring, and it is amazing because that's where the punch gets thrown early in the second round. It kills Apollo Creed. He's dying in the ring. Every reporter runs in there.
Yeah.
They're interviewing Drago, the winner, and Rocky is holding Apollo Creed's head. And I got to think, after watching recent NFL weeks, like, this is the worst sort of protocol, health-wise, to save this man's life.
A doctor can't get to him.
Yeah.
Like, just surrounded
just
by
holding his head.
Yeah. It's one of those things where, at best, you would think maybe they didn't realize he was dead in that moment, or was hoping that, you know, he could be revived. But that's like the best case scenario. And they knew he was dead. Like, there was, like, he was already, like, I think, you know, they're like, he's dead.
Yeah, well, if he dies, he dies.
Yeah,
and you're
exactly.
Like, well, okay, well, somebody knows the future.
Yeah, exactly.
Somebody is a soothsayer, and that would be Ivan Drago. And so that's real. We didn't do the synopsis at the beginning because we kind of think you. So Apollo Creed dies. It's become Rocky's best friend, former rivals, now BFFs. He kills him, so that's going to inspire Rocky to go to Russia on Christmas Day to fight in a non-sanctioned match. He couldn't get the sanctioning, so he has to give up his heavyweight title that he currently owns just to go fight this guy in Russia to get revenge. Training sequences ensue, and then we have our final fight.
Definitely, and two of the greatest montage songs laying atop them.
Yes.
Yeah, so since Eye of the Tiger, which was already a hard thing to top, let's be real.
The movie kicks off with Eye of the Tiger. You're like, where do we go from here?
Yeah.
You only go up thanks to No Easy Way Out by Robert Tepper. Mm-hmm. And then, as Matt pointed out, 5-6 minutes later, Hearts on Fire by John Cafferty. And you just are so ready to climb a literal mountain in the snow, which is what Rocky ends up doing. So is...
Well, does he? Because they do close-up shots of Stallone where you can kind of tell he's at an incline. And then these super wide shots of some dude in the same outfit. I love that. And they cut back to, let's say, there's Stallone and wide shot where he's this big on screen.
That's him. He's yelling Drago. Yeah.
What's crazy is, like, they were in Wyoming, too, which is, don't get me wrong, Wyoming has mountains, but they are not, like, you could walk. Like, it's a hikeable mountains in Wyoming. This is hikeable mountains in Wyoming, legitimately. Like, this is still plainish mountains.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Philo. Do you love TV? Do you love saving money? Then Philo is your solution. Philo has shows, movies, and live TV for just $25 a month. You can even try it for free with their 7-day free trial. No contracts, no commitments, no hassles. Just a better way to watch TV. Never miss a minute of shows like the hit docuseries Where is Wendy Williams? Or classics such as Friends. If you can't get enough TV, then there's no better way to watch. Philo has more than 70 channels like BET, MTV, and AMC. And the best part? You can try it yourself with their 7-day free trial. Sign up today at philo.tv/poppods. That's philo.tv/poppods to get 50% off your first month.
So if we're looking at the movie as a whole, Jacqueline, do you have a favorite scene? Is it one of the training montages? Is it something else that sticks out to you?
You know, in all honesty, I really enjoy watching Ivan Drago's torture through his training sessions, like the other side of it. So it is a montage session, but specifically Ivan Drago's, like, you know,
the most perfectly trained athlete ever.
Exactly. And it really, like, I just love the demonic nature of them, like, you know, like, you know, checking his punch power. And then, like, Bridget Nielsen as his, like, basically, like, emotional translator in all of this, too. Yeah. Like, it was so great to see her character. It was an interesting juxtaposition to what we'd seen with Taya Shire all the way through. Also, I loved all of the opulence of Rocky's surroundings.
Sure.
And just showing, again, like, how one of the sort of conceits of even the very first Rocky is, like, the worst thing to happen to a boxer is success.
Nobody gets out of bed at 5 a.m. when they got silk sheets. Is that Marvin Hagler, I believe, said that? I do love that juxtaposition of the training between Rocky and Drago, because that is going back to Rocky's roots where, look, he's just this you know, club fighter out of Philly.
Yeah.
He doesn't have the resources that a legendary figure like Apollo Creed has. He's got the Rocky gym. And you and I in comics, we always talk about, like, just getting into a dark comedy club where that's kind of the Rocky gym. It's not the fancy lights.
You're punching the meat.
You're literally punching meat. And then we have Drago. And if this movie could possibly get any more 80s, it does when we see the steroid needle go into his butt. So there's just so much good in this movie, Matt. Can you boil it down to the scene that you say that? That's why I keep coming back for more from the Rocky IV well.
Well, first off, Stallone made some excellent choices directing. I will say that.
He did direct it.
During the montages. So the juxtaposition between the two, you've got Drago on one side and all the people that are monitoring him, and it's all very clinical. And then you go to Rocky's, and if any of these two gentlemen are roided up, it's clearly Stallone.
Absolutely. Especially when they take that at the end.
Yeah.
Whoa.
The first time they take their robes off, and you can just tell he's flexing every abductor muscle that he has. His core is like, okay, you don't get that as a guy your size. But anyway. So the two training montages, my favorite are all the people around Rocky as he's doing this stuff. They all individually have a shot where it cuts to them and they go,
they're just nodding.
Just nodding.
Yeah.
For no reason. As he's like, ah! yep, he's doing it.
He's doing it.
Yeah. As somebody that tries to get in the gym as much as I can and like lift weights now, when you watch those training sequences, it's like, dude, you're gonna hurt
yourself.
You're literally going to have an aneurysm, something.
Oh my God. I just thought of that. Cause like I do it now too, which by the way, let's be real. There is nothing about the ridiculously small amount of workout I do and the obscene amount of bitching I do through it that like relates to what Rocky is doing.
It's part of the calorie burn. Like, you're fine.
No, I told that dude, the reason why I pay you is not to make me work out. It's to listen to me bitch as I work out. But anyway,
Rocky pays those guys just to nod their head.
Yeah, exactly.
I've seen somebody do, or at least I've seen tangentially someone like transform their body. It's not like that. It's just a dude doing this a lot. You know, it's like, you know, like it's just like a lot of bench work. Like there's some like this stuff is really like they're being very extra in the workout. It's like, no, we don't want you to live something. We're going to make you chase a chicken. Like, just run.
Well, the thing with Rocky is, like, I understand you want to get back to nature and you just want to train. Like, you want to get that farm strength back. And that's why you go to this remote mountain location
but
in Russia.
But he's from the city.
I mean, why, like, is, why are you chopping
from Philly.
Wood?
You have
just
money.
Do the exercise.
I don't know. He has money to spend on a gym. Instead, he's like, just give me a barn. And they're like, okay, what sort of equipment? He's like, I don't want any equipment. Just give me a barn with another story so I can do sit-ups up to it.
Yeah. Like, give me an ox yoke that I can do this with for some reason.
I realize that they're doing this. I'm like, this is dumb. Like, you can go work out in Hawaii, dude, and you will still be working out.
When he's trying to pull Polly on that sled and they go over to Drago and Drago's using the machine, thereby utilizing all the muscles, and you see Rocky who's like 1 foot struggle fall and you're like, how is this building
I'm
up
sorry,
any muscle?
The more I think...
It's supposed to be about repetition of action.
You know, the more...
With meets resistance and yours is just falling down resistance.
But it like I do wonder if this was a real sporting event that happened. And there's like those services you can get a celebrity to like tell you like happy birthday or something like on Cameo. I would pay top dollar for Stephen A. Smith just to have him react to this match if Rocky did in fact lose. Because maybe it's your training methods. Maybe it's the fact and this never clicked with me until I watched it last night. And I'm pretty sure it's mentioned but maybe glossed over more in the original cut. Is that they tell him as soon as he gets to his compound in Russia, they're like, oh, by the way, you're not allowed to have any sparring partners. And they're like, what?
I don't remember them saying that.
We're not allowed to have. Yeah. So it's like a bit. It's like you cannot bring in any fighters to spar with. Huh. So now Drago can spar and knock out whoever he wants. Rocky has nobody to spar with. So that's why he's just walking in the mountains by himself. He's got no friends.
I love it. It is ridiculous leather Sherpa-lined jacket. This whole outfit. I couldn't tell if those were jeans or sweatpants he's wearing. It's just perfect.
Fly in Clubber Lang, you know?
I stand by what I said, and this is a camp picture. Rocky doing this way is literally like Nathan Lane in The Birdcage pretending that he's not going to go on. And so he's kinda like literally like, it's got to be like this. Like, this is so camp. This is so camp.
But that's what makes
He's
it.
Like,
it's not
we're
going
to put on a show and we have to show them how hard we worked and we're going to make it butch, ladies and gentlemen. It's going to be ice and yolks.
But you do see throughout this movie, you see how much of a friendship Rocky and Apollo Creed had built. And I think that's like a real thing in this movie is based on his training to fight Clubber Lang in the rematch that was spearheaded by Apollo Creed because he's like, dude, the way you were training, that's not how you beat Clubber Lang. You got to let me teach you some stuff that you don't know. So they go to LA and that's where they like race on the beach and stuff. And so we see a lot of those callbacks in the montages in Rocky IV. But I do like how it this movie is so important to the Creed franchise. Yeah. And that's maybe one of the reasons why I feel like we need to get this tomato meter back up to fresh, because we don't get Creed without this, because you see how strong the fiber of friendship is between Apollo and Rocky. Sure. And that's why somebody like Adonis Creed in the first movie, Creed can show up to Rocky's restaurant another generation later and be like, hey, I'm going to literally guilt trip you into training me because you let my dad die in the ring.
I mean, and it worked. It would work on me. It would work on you. Because like, absolutely, you couldn't be heartless. But honestly, I figured out a way to make this happen to get to the 40%.
Okay.
I think.
What a low bar was set. Just get back to 40%.
I think I should put this out here.
No, 60%.
I was going to say, I was like, boy, that seems like a low threshold.
Least, I mean, we can at least get to 40 maybe. I think I can maybe do that. Because in all honesty, the more you were talking about these male friendships, I'm just, my fanfic brain is working. Like, I could see a story where it is Rocky who has this secret love affair with Apollo Creed, and then Drago kills him in the ring. And so then Rocky wants to fight him in the ring, but then he realizes through the fight that they really love each other. Like, this is a fan fiction waiting to be written.
Yeah, but this seems like a Ben-Hur, Charlton Heston knew about the gay subtext, but didn't know about the gay subtext.
Literally, like, I really do feel like this is a fan fiction, and I will release the fan fiction to every single person that votes this movie fresh. Like literally.
Listeners of our podcast will know Jacqueline's affinity for sports-themed erotica.
Yes, it is.
She reads on beaches from here to the other side of the world. I've seen her travel schedule. It's intense. There's a lot of frequent flyers. You're going to have a good time in first class with a bottle of Chardonnay and some Rocky Apollo lovemaking fan fiction.
I think people would be down for it. I'm not kidding you. There's so many like gay undercones to this.
Yeah, but you might get the critic meter go up and then the audience meter is going to go down.
We're not going to change the movie. I'm just bribing people who do care about that level of nonsense to vote the movie up. Because let's be real, they're not in the 35 camp. Those were in the 65 camp. This may bring them over to our side. This is outreach.
Okay. All right.
This is outreach. This is not trying to take anything away from the movie. The movie exists on its own. This is just for the dark corners of the internet where we like to play.
Where you're trying to bribe for votes.
Yes.
The movie does steer you in a lot of different directions. It can take your brain and say, oh, well, what if we tackled that thread? Or what if we walked down this rabbit hole? Where we ultimately end up is Russia and a convincing victory by Rocky Balboa. And he does manage to win over the Russian crowd that night because they just see the heart of a champion. They start chanting Rocky. Certain members of the Politburo just kind of stand and clap, whether it's for political reasons or they were genuinely moved. The Director's Cut, by the way, they all just kind of take off.
As they should.
Way more sense.
And I'm watching the Director's Cut. Let me go on this tangent now. The Director's Cut is a different movie, man. I mean, you get the same outcomes in the fights, obviously, but there are full scenes that are put in that we've never seen before, and there's full scenes taken out. There's a great discussion between Rocky and Apollo about aging and about where Apollo's been and how Apollo doesn't feel relevant anymore. And Stallion, because he's the heavyweight champion of the world currently, can't identify with what Apollo is going through because Apollo's always been a little bit further in his career. Mm-hmm. And so he's like, no, dude, when you get to be me, you're going to understand what I'm talking about. And it's this real emotional stuff. It's like really well done. And when we put that in, what do we take out? We take out some of the silliness with Paulie's birthday.
Sure.
The robot. That's the studio.
Yeah, you can easily cut that out.
Yeah. And the robot was in the movie, as Tim alluded to, for two reasons. One, it's the 80s and robots were the future.
Yes.
Two, it's because apparently that robot was able to help impact one of Stallone's sons who was dealing with autism. And so it was a way to reach through to that kid. And so Stallone's like, well, yeah, this is great. Let's put it in the movie. And so now Polly turns it into this hot voiced.
Yeah, potential sex robot.
Robot.
Look, it's an account. It was.
You're talking about fan fiction. What did Polly and that robot do?
I was just about to say, honestly, every piece of media would be better improved with a fan fiction overlay of just a little bit of dirty writing. I'm telling you, it all gets better. But it was an accommodation tool for an autistic kid that also became an accommodation tool for Polly, who is like also coded autistic. He's grumpy. He doesn't like people.
That's fair.
He wants to be on his own. Yeah. And he's very particular about the food that he eats. Dude, give that guy some liking trains and he's Sheldon from the Big Bang Theory.
Or he's just a crotchety old man.
Or he's just a crotchety old man. Yeah, coded. Again, coded.
Did Adrian help or hurt this movie as far as Rocky's performance in the final fight? Because she doesn't want him to go. By the way, this is a woman. She's always stood by his side. This is the same human being who woke up from a coma towards the end of Rocky II, and the first thing she said, just win. Go win, right? Go kick his ass right now. And so we know Adrian's in it for the long haul. She is insulted by Clubber Lang in Rocky III, so obviously want to kick that guy's ass, get some revenge there. But she really doesn't want Rocky to go. Mm. She doesn't want Rocky to go to Russia.
Apollo got killed right in front of her. I don't blame her for having reservations.
But then, as producer Brian just alerted me to, she does, in fact, meet Rocky in Russia. Where's their son? We don't know where their son is.
No.
He's probably being watched.
He's at home. We see him. He's watching the fight later on.
Yeah.
With two friends. So there doesn't seem to be a parental figure involved. Well, whatever. Maybe the robot.
The robot is in that scene, actually. The robot is in the scene where they're watching.
There's a nanny, and the robot's helping out. Come on.
Okay,
like,
so he can afford a nanny, just not like a weight bench to fly to Russia.
That plot hole is not going to get any smaller by poking more holes in it. So I'm with you.
I mean, that was part of the agreement of going over there because the guy from the state that drops him off is like, this is everything that you asked for, which is apparently just a cabin in the middle of the woods. And a freaking shed for you to work out in. So I don't know if weights were part of the deal of him going over there, but apparently not.
Let me ask you two.
Or like, why couldn't he work out in the States and then just fly over at the end?
Yeah, I don't know. That's a great question.
Because you're not going to get the same level of toughness as you do in the Russian cold with everybody in the world against you. But here's why I asked the question about Adrian. I love the character of Adrian, but he clearly went to Russia early to get minimalist, to just have his training team around. You two have other people in your lives. There's, dare I say, the word love. What does it do to you if you go to Russia to go fight this guy and you just want sole focus and then your partner shows up unannounced maybe a week, 2 weeks before the fight? Are you happy about it? Or are you secretly like, what do you do? You're ruining the routine.
Hold on. I like that you're asking for my genuine reaction to, first off, I'm the world heavyweight champ. Second, I saw my best friend get murdered in the ring by this dude, and now I've flown across the world to go train. And my wife suddenly shows up. How do I feel? I guess pretty good considering I'm facing my own mortality, considering this guy just killed my best friend.
It's going to ruin your focus. Your boxer has to have legs.
Maybe it helps.
There's a lot of yeses that I have to go through to get there. And I don't know if I can make the mental leap.
Okay, maybe this is just me trying to rationalize my decision to live alone and live a life of celibacy the rest of my life.
If your dog showed up, and you weren't expecting it, would it throw you off your game?
Yes, it would break my training. Now I got to take her out.
She's out there running with you. And you guys are climbing the mountain together. You stand up. You're holding her above your head like Simba at the top of the mountain.
I'm getting
hearts
my
on fire.
Head kicked in by Ivan Drago. And it's because the announcer is saying, well, yeah, he wasn't getting good sleep the last couple of weeks because his dragon snoring dog kept waking him up every 2 hours.
I mean, I don't know.
Get her a little CPAP mask.
Note to partners out there, don't show up unannounced with a couple weeks left in training. Let him fight the fight. Show up for the fight if you want.
Okay, I see what you're saying. Like, do I find fault in her decisions? Yes. But also, I couldn't have even, like, I would have never gotten to the point of boarding the plane when your partner is like, don't go. And you're like, I got to do what I got to do. Like, that is the leap I can't get past.
That was the question I was going to ask. Does Rocky make a convincing enough argument to pull this thing off to anybody?
No.
Because
what, his rationale for choosing to do it?
His rationale, it's, and I love this movie, but it's because he's trying to talk Apollo out of it. He's like, well, Apollo, we're not the same guys we were, you know, and so we can't do that. And so Apollo goes and he sees what happens to Apollo. And then all of a sudden, Rocky has this thing turn where he's arguing with on the staircase with Adrian at his house. And he's like, because I'm a fighter. It's one of my favorite lines in the movie. When she's like, why do you have to do this? He's like, because I'm a fighter. So did Apollo just remind Rocky who Rocky really was all along? Or was this Rocky just so incensed with revenge? Because I think it's just more he just realized, oh, yeah, this is the thing I'm good at.
Well, I mean, if it's revenge, I don't know that he emotes that, where you see the rage of wanting to get the satisfaction of, you know, getting back this guy.
The eye of the tiger.
Yeah, but you would assume that'd have to be part of the motivation. Maybe it's also the, I don't want this guy stealing the thunder of what I've got. I don't know. That's a good question. Because you don't see it on the screen.
No, and Rocky was on the top of the world. I mean, it was sad that he lost his trainer, but Mick, how many years did Mick have left anyway? So Clubber Lang gets knocked out by Rocky, and he wins, and he's heavyweight champion of the world, and he's on cloud nine. And then I think he's just a guy who now can still fight at the same level he used to, but he just needs supreme motivation. it's not just, he doesn't, I never saw Rocky as that like Michael Jordan, Kobe Bryant level of competitor.
No.
Where he's just an assassin who needs to rip your heart out every time he wakes up. I feel like Rocky needs the proper motivation. I feel like Apollo Creed dying did that.
Yeah, I wonder, I'm not even kidding you. I wonder if it's just, you hurt my friend and ego. Like, just guilt. Just survivor's guilt.
Oh, the guilt is interesting.
Yeah, like, it's just survivor's guilt.
He's fighting himself in that ring in Russia.
Yeah, he's like, I knew he shouldn't have done this, and I let him do it anyway. The only way I can make it right is to hurt the person.
Yeah, because he holds back throwing the towel in because
he's holding that towel for a while.
Yeah. But throw in the towel! And he's
so,
like, eh.
Yeah, I just think it's survivors. And honestly, that's the through line that you take all the way into Creed for why he also agrees to Apollo. Is he still, even after what he thought was going to make him feel whole, getting back at Drago, he still feels guilty to the point where Apollo's illegitimate kid comes knocking on his door. He still feels a debt. Needs to be paid.
He still holds it, yeah. And they just have that, like, I think it's just that they don't have any pictures. That's right. It's a point in Creed 2, which is one of my favorite scenes in any film in this franchise, is when Drago shows up at Rocky's restaurant and he's looking at all the pictures and he's like, you don't have any pictures of our fight? And Rocky's like, yeah, I didn't really want to remember it.
Yeah.
And it's like, ooh, that's, oh, that everything about Creed 2 made Rocky 4 so much better.
yeah. Exactly.
Because you also get like that, you get a sympathetic side of Drago that it wouldn't have paid off the same way if this movie came out 5 or 15 years after Rocky IV. You needed all of this time to really let, I think, us heal our wounds from the Cold War and like get other, I don't know, international baddie countries in front of Russia. And then we see Creed II and it's like, maybe these guys did change just a little bit. Maybe Drago did have one ear listening to Rocky's speech at the end of this movie.
Well, it seemed like, because when he turns to the Politburo and just like, I'm fighting for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This isn't about the collective anymore. So you can't come down here and bark at me type of. He had already changed in that moment.
Yeah.
And he paid the price for it afterwards. Because that's what we find out in Creed 2 is like he paid a very heavy penalty. One, for losing and also for his disobedience. But can we also just, I wanted to add this, Florian, that is the product of those two people having a kid. A kid that literally is bigger than like a house and built like,
oh, with
like,
Brigitte Nielsen.
Yes. Like, can you imagine the product of those two having a baby? Mm-hmm. I mean, he's built like a horse and like, that
it
fits.
Wasn't in the movies. Like, she's some renowned tennis player.
She's a world-class athlete too. And I'll say, I was going to ask you all this before we move on to like kind of ranking the Rocky movies in general, is there any other, maybe it's a performance, it's a line, it's some other sneaky moment in Rocky IV that really grabs you? Because she's great in the movie, in the limited time she has, and she has even less time in the director's cut. Not sure what happened there. But Tony Burton, the actor who just passed away not too long ago as Duke, the trainer, formerly Apollo Creed's trainer, now he's training Rocky. He is great in this. When he is giving Rocky just that quiet little pep talk the night before training really begins, and he's like, you're going to have to go through hell, but if you do, I promise you'll be, at the end, you'll be the one standing. Like, just everything Duke does in this movie is perfect.
Yeah, he's great in it. Actually, you get a little bit more from Paulie than you have in previous films.
That was the one I was going to go to.
Yeah, a little bit of heart.
Where he opens up, if I could unzip myself and step out and be anyone else, it'd be you.
Right before Rocky fights, he's kind of like, hey, sorry, I've been an asshole.
Yeah, and then in the ring, he's like, no, hey, this guy, never mind that, all right?
Yeah.
But I think Dolph actually, for being able to pull off what should be a caricature villain, and there seems to be some sort of levels to it where it's not just this cut and paste kind of bad guy that you would anticipate from an 80s movie like this, especially for an action film disguised as a boxing movie. There's some subtlety to that, which upon a rewatch, kind of surprised. It was like, that's better performance than I remember.
Yeah, he's really smart. That's the other thing that's most surprising me about that. I actually did our Creed 2 junket for us here. And like, Dolph Lundgren's a genius, like a legitimate genius.
PhD candidate.
Yeah, definitely. I actually, though, it was Paulie. Like, the softening of Paulie towards the end of this film is really adorable. And also, his thing with the robot, like, they were comic relief, and I'm not saying that I would be like sad if it didn't have it in there, but there was an unthawing there. And I do think that that is a little bit coded more than crotchety, because crotchety doesn't unthaw like that.
And movie, I will defend the robot's appearance in the movie in the original cut, because again, not in the director's cut at all, but I think it does serve a legit purpose, because you're seeing how spoiled you do get once you have everything you've ever wanted.
Yes.
And the height of everything you ever wanted in the 80s was I wanted my own robot. So you've won all these championships. You have all this money. And the same could be said for Apollo Creed, because we see him chilling with his dogs in his pool in his mansion. Mm-hmm. And so they're just living the dream, but you're not in that pit of hate that Florian was born into, that Ivan Drago emerged from. And so you just don't have the same
fight,
desire, the same heart until you get that Eye of the Tiger back. And for Rocky, unfortunately for Apollo, that was seeing him die in the ring. So in case you didn't know, Apollo Creed, no longer with us. And I gave a speech in college, one of my public speaking classes. We had to give a speech on a historical figure. And I, without asking permission, I got an A on it. I just gave a speech on Apollo Creed and how he was the greatest heavyweight champion of all time. And I guess I pulled it off okay, because in my speech, I made a girl cry when the look of shock on her face when I said that he died in the ring at the hands of the towering Russian Ivan Drago. She was like, I was like, oh, I'm killing this thing.
Oh, man. And then a comic was born, ladies and gentlemen.
I liked the power of being in front of an audience. It was good. Fun stuff.
A comic was born.
So I think the real hot take we've all been kind of leading up to here, Matt Nost, is your ranking of the Rocky movies. And we're putting the Creed films in there as well. So all the Rockies, all the Creeds, including Rocky V, Rocky Balboa, all that stuff. Where is Rocky IV? And if it's not at the top of the mountain, what is for you?
It's at the top of the mountain.
Rocky IV is.
Rocky IV is the best Rocky movie that they made.
Wow.
Look, you're talking to six-year-old me, who forever will say, that is the greatest boxing movie I've ever seen. So it's my favorite. It's the most rewatchable. I will happily watch it again right now. I haven't seen the director's cut.
Treat yourself. Everybody out there listening, it really is a different movie.
Mm.
Darker tone, more in-depth. Dolph Lundgren has a lot more to say, actually.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I'll check this out then.
But yeah, numero uno.
Is there a close second for you? Is there a content? Is it Creed 2?
But no, it is not Creed 2. I don't know, maybe 3. Maybe I actually kind of liked, what was it, Balboa?
Rocky Balboa, it's good.
You liked Balboa? Okay, wow.
That one was interesting.
Not about Balboa ago?
Yeah.
No, I like it more than Rocky 5. Rocky 5 always falls at the bottom, is the bottom of my list, without question. I don't remember.
How you screw up Don King that hard is beyond me.
George Washington Duke.
Yeah, he's a great actor. Don't know why that was the choice.
That was really
I feel
not great.
If Rocky V was not named Rocky V, it was just like a movie about a guy who like kind of felt like he got double crossed by his protege. It's not the worst film I've ever seen. It's just in a Rocky movie. It just, especially coming off of Rocky IV and that triumphant USA kind of thing, it had to morph into something else. It just morphed into something that maybe we just could have left it at Rocky IV and then still had the comeback fight with Rocky Balboa all those years later. There is a cool scene, though, the beginning of Rocky V, where it's like him right after the fight.
Yeah,
I do remember that.
And he's just kind of sitting there and it's like, oh, I think he's got CTE or something like that. Apparently,
didn't
keep him out of the ring 15
years
later.
Did you watch this fight?
But it was tough.
That's another performance we should award is the ref on that, because I don't know what the rules of this fight were. In the second round, he goes down to his knee and instantly stands up, and the ref is like, no harm, no foul, go.
Yeah,
and you're like, I'm pretty sure he gets a standing eight in this moment. I'm pretty sure.
No, they're definitely not doing a concussion protocol at that point. They're like, if he dies, he dies.
Exactly.
Come on.
Can he walk? He's fine. All right, Malkovich.
What's your number one? I mean, because for me, it could be the first. It could be this one. It could be like Matt Nost. It could also be either one of the first two Rockies. It could be the first Creed movie.
So I would definitely put Rocky number one. And this is the reason why, because the first Rocky, in addition to being a really great rags to riches story, is just scored and cinematically filmed in a way that I just find just kind of gripping. Like the Philadelphia moment scene, like that's like the part that you pay attention to. But there's an entire lead up to that that is like legitimately, again, just like incredible cinema. It's better than Tony walking down on Saturday Night Live. It's better than the Chariots of Fire. It really like puts you into this hometown here. It's Belle at the beginning of Beauty and the Beast. Like you're learning the city, you're learning all of that. It is so much an I Want song.
There goes the cheesesteak guy with the steaks on.
Yeah, I mean, legitimately. And so I would say,
it's the battery thrower on my block.
Facts.
Exactly.
There's the thing about Rocky movies, they're ballads. They're ballads of heroes. Like that's what they are. And so I find the ones that feel like a ballad, the ones that I enjoy the most. So that would be the first Rocky, the first Creed, the 2 and 3, and then also Rocky IV. So all of those get a lot higher than me. Then I would just say 5 and Balboa, which are not ballady. ballady to me.
Yeah, I found out courtesy of producer Brian this morning that Bill Conti, who did the music for the first two Rocky films, was not able to come back because he was working on the first two Karate Kid movies.
Yes.
So you have a different score. It's much more of its time with Survivor doing not only the Eye of the Tiger, but also Burning Heart. And then you had John Cafferty and you had, you know, Robert Tepper and some Frank Stallone in there as well in Rocky III and Rocky IV.
I mean, if you can get them, you do.
Yeah. if you can get them, you do.
That's the problem. Scheduling, busy.
Yeah.
But if you can get them.
It's a big if. But if you still, if you're going to the gym and you listen to this podcast right now, keep listening to the podcast, do all the rate and review and all that good stuff we love. But right before you hit the gym, turn this off and put on Vince DiCola's War, which is the theme that they do, the two different montages melded together where you get to see Rocky's rudimentary training style and Drago's advanced techniques. And it leads all the way up to the crescendo where he is on the top of a mountain yelling Drago.
Yeah.
It's good, good stuff.
Like that as was, if he can hear him.
Yeah, but that was so quick at the ready. So did you listen to that working out today?
Just about every day of my life, I listen to Vince DiCola's War.
I need to find something that motivates me better in the gym because honestly, it's just perfunctory.
One of the things...
I do it because I have to.
One of the things recently that's done it for me was you and I got to see an advanced screening of Creed 3, which drops in theaters next week.
Yep.
And it's just every time I get into the theater to see one of those things, the way it's shot in IMAX, Michael B. Jordan making his directorial debut and stepping back into the ring... literally against just a guy who is just on such a streak right now, Jonathan Majors.
Yeah.
What a great villainous presence, but there's a lot more to it than just like this Ivan Drago sort of statue.
Yes, and I will say, I don't think this Creed installment is necessarily looking to like reinvent the wheel, but if you're looking for just a Creed movie that I think you're going to be able to sit down and watch and enjoy and have moments that really sort of speak to you, I really think this is definitely going to be the one that folks are going to find, I guess, a lot of fun with it.
All right, okay. So Matt Nose, the last word goes to you about Rocky IV. All right, you got you're an old gray man. This is some many decades in the future.
You mean right now?
You're sitting around. Not,
have you seen my beard lately?
Not in spirit. We know you're already in the home in spirit.
Someone did that to me the other day. Might want to update that picture, buddy.
Damn.
It was only like 5 years ago, but when this grows out, this is all gray in this
No, once that first gray one comes, you get the razor and start shaving again like I did. What are you telling the kids? Like what is it about Rocky IV that makes it special?
God, I wonder if it's one of those you need to see it at a specific age. Because if I showed it to somebody now who's an adult, it's like I showed my wife a Labyrinth and I figured that'd be a safe bet because she was like, that was so boring. I didn't enjoy that at all. And I was like, wow, really?
She'd never seen it?
Never seen it. And
that's the woman you want showing up 2 weeks before you fight Drago?
Because she's going to give me just the unvarnished truth. That's what I need.
She's not just going to be nodding along in the barn as you do sit-ups.
I think this might be a case of you need to indoctrinate the kids early.
And I think for honks like us that it just, you know, I mean, Rocky IV, we had it on constantly on a loop when I was in college. And it's just one of those movies that always exists. If you need, like you're talking about, I need some fresh energy in the gym. I need something new to motivate me. It's kind of what Creed II satisfied a lot of that because you do get a lot of those old rivalries. And it was just done so, so well. So you never know. You can bury mythology, and then sometimes it'll come back in a way that emotionally surprises you. That's going to do it for Movie Talk today. We don't have a mailbag, so we're just going to go right to close. Brian, you want to hit some music anyway for us? Matt Nost, always a pleasure to have you in the building. Get to see you face-to-face.
It's good to see you, buddy.
To smell your musk, to look at your beard, your Thank wise, you. grizzled beard.
My graying, ever-graying beard.
So mean.
This show.
It's not mean. It's the fact of life.
I want to save a couple more minutes for you to kind of tell the audience about Settle the Score because you're missing out if you don't check this show out on YouTube. It is so much fun to compete in, but it's also just fun to watch because everybody at home is going to know at least a couple of these scores. We talk about the Rocky score. You know that, but sometimes if you just hear it, you're like, oh God, I know that. What's it from? That's the mountain you have to climb to win Settle the Score.
Yeah, we tailor to whoever comes on. So if you came on, you're like, listen, I want fan fiction written by these specific authors. You're like, no problem. I will find the movies that work for that.
Got you.
So we tailor it to the players because the whole point of the show is like, we're just here to have fun. We're not trying to prove who's the greatest of all time. It's like, I have no need of that. I just want to enjoy myself. And it's three rounds. And depending on what the round is, you're either going to get a score or a soundtrack, and we give you a clue, and then my partner plays the piano, and he's phenomenal.
Nice.
He's phenomenal.
Andy Merriweather, shout out to him. Just nice. A sweetheart of a human and just so talented.
And the best is I will find stuff where I'm like, I cannot wait to hear you do this. Like the German version of Major Tom from Atomic Blonde. We did that where he sings in all German.
Wow.
And he's like, you're an asshole. But he learned it and it's great.
And he sang it in German?
He sang it in German.
Oh, wow.
We've had Brian on.
Oh, nice.
Tailored the show to him and he's still lost. Specifically asked him, what are the things that you're good at? And he said, here they are. And he lost
game. Producer Brian.
Was, him and his two partners on their show. And they're really good at the game. So I was like, Brian, we want you to win this one. I'm not going to tell them we're doing this in advance. Give me your genres. Give me your directors. And then I tailored it to him and he still lost.
Well, that's why you're not being 100% that day, my candid. Andy loves the competition. Andy wants everybody to have a good time. There is part of Matt notes that going back to your Rocky and Bullwinkle reference earlier, he's got a little snidely whiplash in him.
He's got a little mustache twirling.
With you? Yes.
Always with me, whether I'm playing Settle the Score.
I've known you. Look, we've known each other since we were the fat iterations of ourselves. We used to be fat alcoholics together. So we carry a lot of baggage
I was on vacation.
I wouldn't do that with you. It's fun and jovial. I'm going to take
shots. He will eventually.
Yeah, it's okay.
If we became good enough friends, yes, I would.
I mean, look, I don't mind it. I was raised by a woman, so let's be real.
We're giving it early. You're also a fantastic stand-up comedian. So for upcoming tour days, check out Matt Nosa and all of his social platforms. And congrats on a great run with your show Top 10, your podcast with our buddy John Rocha. We love when we do get mailbags, though. We just didn't have time for it today. So email us, rtiswrong@rottentomatoes.com. Subscribe, rate, review, whatever your platform of choice encourages you to do for podcasts you like. Do it for us because not only do you like us, you love us. And if I died in the ring, you would avenge me in Russia on Christmas Day. Next week's episode, Jacqueline, what do we got? Who are we talking to? What are we talking about?
We're getting dark.
Yes!
Gonna take it to the dark side. This is so bad.
Please talk like that the entire episode.
No. Who is that?
Give me that prudish NPR girl.
I don't like her. She peeks her head out. No, we're doing our After Dark episodes, which is basically whatever happens to come into our mind.
All right. For Jacqueline, for Matt, for Glenn, for Remsen, for Brian, the producer who lost, even though he had a huge leg up in his most recent Sum of the Score appearance. The whole gang here at Rotten Tomatoes, I am Mark Ellis. Thank you, and we will see you next week.